All right, folks, that is going to do it for my half of Memphis Flyer Radio, the talk half of the show. You got to stick around, though, for that second half over there where our music editor, Alex Green, he's going to spin you some records, he's going to tell you some tales, and he's going to sound dadgum good doing it, I promise y'all. All right, well, hopefully the situation will be better when we get back here next Friday. Y'all try to stay safe and warm out there. Thanks for joining us. All right, Alec, take it away. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for that expert handoff there, Toby. Very gracious, as always. I'm Alex, the music editor at memphisflyer.com, and we have a special half hour today. We're going to talk with the subject of our music feature this week, Mr. Todd Snyder. He's here in the studio. How you doing, Todd?
Doing good, man. I love that Booker T. Oh, no, that's not Booker T. Last night is Marquise.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That was actually me and this guy Paul Taylor jamming in the Crosstown studio a few years ago.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah, well, as you said in the interview we did a week ago, you know, the whole town of Memphis is in the pocket.
Yeah, that's really cool. I hadn't even thought of that till we were talking, but yeah, it's like a really rhythmic place.
Yeah, and that was kind of an epiphany for you when you moved here in around 1990 or so?
Yeah, it was about 1990, and I had sent a song to Keith Sykes, who lives here still. He liked the song, and I didn't have anything else to do, so I just drove here and started making songs and playing bars here. I got that gig at the Daily Planet, and then every month if I had a new song, I'd show it to Keith. And then he was always the one that was pushing that there had to be a tempo and a rhythm and you had to stay in it, which isn't a lot of, that's not high on the folk chart of priorities for a lot of folk people. But it's important to me now just because of Keith, you know. And that's like, Keith is a Memphis folk singer. You can move to it if you want to, you know.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. And, yeah, I would say, you know, it really shows right off the bat on your first album. It's pretty groovy.
Thank you, yeah. That band is going to be playing tonight. It took a lot to get the label to let our band do the record by ourselves, but they did. I had to stand my ground for a while, but they let us do it. And Joe Marinchek and Joe McCleary and myself went up there. And Eddie Shaver, who's gone now, played guitar. And then right after we got done with the record, we got Will Kimbrough. And he played on the next couple records, and he's going to be there tonight opening the show. And the Joes are coming down tonight. We're going to do about 8 songs or something like that.
Well, that's great. And Will is going to join your band too, right?
Yeah, he was like our ringer. He had already had a record deal and toured the world, and the Margaritaville people introduced me to him and said, "Let this guy take over your band," and I did, and learned so much from him.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Wow. Is it going to be a challenge recalling
from
30 years ago?
In my mind, I'm like, nah, we could just do it. We were going to practice last night, but then the storm came, and we have sound check to talk through some stuff. I feel like if we just listened to the songs, we'd be able to go do it. And I'm this close to saying we could just do it.
Yeah.
Might just try that and see if a train wreck is entertaining.
Well, it's always nice to have a bit of a edge of the seat element, unpredictability.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, if you tour with a band, I've found, you know, even decades later, it's so ingrained in your brain. It's like riding a bike. You just
That's what I have a feeling it's going to be like.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. Hope people come out, and it's pretty nice down here. The shows are sold out. I just hope people will come.
Well, I must say the roads are not slick at all.
Yeah.
I walked over here to err on the side of caution, but I didn't slip once.
Right. You live walking distance from here, too. That's cool.
Yeah. I thought we would maybe break up the interview a little with the few selections from your catalog.
Oh, yeah. Right on, yeah.
I was thinking of playing the debut track from your debut album, just to take us back to your Memphis days.
Yeah, yeah. I still play this every once in a while.
It really struck a nerve with me, because we're basically of the same generation.
Right, yeah.
And
that song, I can tell you, when I made it up, as I remember when I was telling you earlier, I wanted my own band to play on the record, and I was not signing with anybody. I was taking a big risk. And they all wanted me to be grunge, because it was 92. And I had this country rock idea, and I wasn't going to let go of it, you know. And I remember I was playing. They used to have a South by Southwest type thing here in Memphis. It was like all the labels would come, and a bunch of bands, Dickinson's, me, a bunch of people like that, would try to get signed to a record deal. And the year that I had three record companies talking to me at the time, but they all wanted me to use their musicians. And then I wrote this song. It's Talking Seattle. Is that it or All Right Guy?
This is My Generation.
Oh, okay, person. Okay, yeah. I'm talking about a different song, but... oh, yeah, that song, it opens with that song, My Generation. I played that at the Daily Planet so many times. In fact, My Generation, I remember when I played that at the Planet, the rugby team was there. I remember I played that song three times that night and thought, hey, I really got a song here, you know, that... That really struck a nerve with the crowd that first night at the Daily Planet.
Yeah, I can see why, because, you know, it really, I remember in that era, you know, the 60s and early 70s loomed large in everyone's imagination.
Yeah.
And everyone wanted to recapture some of that spirit of revolution.
Yeah.
I think there was even a Woodstock in the 90s, very questionable.
Yeah.
But you kind of... it's a good kind of looking askance at our generation, the generation of stonewashed jeans.
Right. I remember when it's funny you say that about, because I was feeling that way, and I was singing my folk songs and thinking, who's going to want to hear folk songs? And that's made me, I was like, my generation stinks. And then I started going, that was my excuse for not being popular, you know. Like,
well, that's good.
Yeah.
Let's hear this, My Generation, Part 2, by Todd Snyder.
Did you know that there are people who put us down for no other reason than the simple fact that we get around? My Generation, Part 2, Verse 3, Chapter 4, Jackson 5, Nikki 6. Generation found a way to make this nation open up its eyes and take a look around. And he says, my generation ain't good for nothing. I can think of something, so I thought I'd jot it down. So here's the hair gel hanging out at the health spa, using condom sense and watching L.A. Long. Here's the drum machine, stonewashed jeans, credit cards, fax machines, big bow-headed chicks and frat guys. Wearing $40 tie-dye t-shirts and big bold paisley ties. And here's the living off dad as long as you can and blending in with the crowd. Oh, my generation, my generation, my generation should be proud. So shopping malls, and there ain't any price we're too proud to pay. We'll buy anything from Diet Sprite to 1,000 points of light. Well, I admit we're not that bright, but I'm proud anyway. So here's the hair gel hanging out at the health spa, using condom sense and watching Arsenio Hall. Here's the drum machine, stonewashed jeans, credit cards, fax machines, big bow-headed chicks and frat guys. generation, my generation. Strike a pose, there's nothing to it. My generation, my generation, my generation should be proud.
And we're back.
Yeah. Welcome back to Radio Land, dear listeners. That was the first cut on the first album by Todd Snyder, who's my guest today.
Yeah.
WYXR.org. And the album has some Memphis resonance because it's titled Songs for the Daily Planet,
right,
which is where you cut your teeth.
Yeah,
you
that's right.
Yeah.
I played every Thursday. Kenny, the owner, I went to the open mic on Wednesday and asked him if I could play by myself on Thursdays, and he said, yeah, and I did that. I was going to do that forever, you know.
you were content.
Yeah, yeah. Sid Salvage was playing at a bar downtown, and he was like 45. I was like, this is great. I'll do this.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd play around here. But then, like you said, we made that album, and now I kind of play all over.
Yeah, so the album kind of took off, and you started touring.
Yeah,
and,
worked. We were just talking about it. Got in the USA Today, started touring, never stopped till pandemic. I always say, this is my second tour. Because usually you stop a tour if the record's a hit, and you go, but I've never had big hit records, so we just tour and tour. It doesn't matter when the record comes out or any of that.
When did you technically leave Memphis?
96, I think, 96. And it was just to, because I was just living too hard, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I moved out, way out in the country in, Fairview, Tennessee, which was about 30 miles ahead of Nashville, you know, from here.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of people who did that.
Yeah, we roared in this town. We go down to Highland Q and Newbies. We had so much fun.
And you were telling me you would, I believe you said you would sit in with the Great Indoorsmen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And they'd sit in with me, too. Those were my friends. I still talk to them. Bobby Memphis just passed away about a week ago. Freddie Whitber does whatever he wants, man. Those guys were great. And Son of Slam, that was our era, too. Those three bands would hang out at the Highland Q. I remember. And then, like, I think you were the one that said this. I knew Patterson Hood before he was in the Drive-By Truckers.
Oh, yeah.
Me and him used to follow Kevin Kinney around when he'd be in town.
Party.
Yeah, right? Yeah, Kevin was a good guy. The Driving and Crying, they were nice to the musicians in this town when they would come to town. They gave us all hope.
Yeah. What a scene. You were just saying while we played that last track how this next one I'm going to play, the label insisted you do this solo, and if you did that, then they were fine with you having your own band on the rest of it.
Yeah, the Seattle song. And I made it. It's funny, I was already talking to the three labels. All of them were telling me I had to be grunge. And I made up the song that morning. I can't even believe I played it that night. I made it up that day. And I went down there and I played it. And before I could even get to the dressing room, the guy from Margaritaville had dropped my shoulders. He was like, listen, that song about Seattle, is that going to be on the record? And I said, yeah. He goes, is it just you, this song? It's going to be you? And I said, yeah. He goes, you can come to Margaritaville and make whatever record you want, whatever you do with the other 10 songs, I don't care. And I was like, we did it. So we went up to Nashville. It was me and the two Joes and Eddie Shaver, who's gone. It was Billy Joe Shaver's son. Mm-hmm. Then after that, Will Kimbrough came in and was our life coach or just, you know, leader. You
know? Yeah. Boy, that brings back memories of, you know, Seattle reigning supreme.
Yeah.
And everyone would say, oh, will Memphis be the next Seattle?
Yeah. And, I wanted us to be that.
all the performers.
I remember before I had ever heard who Kurt Cobain was, me and Kevin were at a store and somebody asked me if I was him. And Kevin said, yes, he is. He is. And I like later, I go, who is that? And he goes, oh, you should see this guy.
By any means necessary.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear this.
All right.
This is Talkin' Seattle Blues.
Yeah, I think we were.
Hey, hey, my, my, rock and roll will never die. Just hang your hair down in your eyes, you'll make $1 million. Lives in this band going nowhere fast. We sent out demos, but everybody passed. So one day we finally took the plunge, moved out to Seattle to play some grunge. Washington State, that is. Space Needle, Eddie Vedder, Mutton Honey. Fast, we wear flannel shirts. We turn our amps up until it hurts. We got bad attitudes, and what's more, when we play, we stare straight down at the floor while we. Pretty scary. How pensive. How totally alternative. Now, to fit in on the Seattle scene, you gotta do something they ain't never seen. So, thinking up a gimmick one day, we decided to be the only band that wouldn't play a note. Under any circumstances. Silence. Music's original alternative. Roots grunge. Well, we spread the word through the underground that we were the hottest new thing in town. A record guy came out to see us one day, and just like always, we didn't play. It knocked him out. He said he loved our work. He said he loved our work, but he wasn't sure if he could sell a record with nothing on it. I said, tell him we're from Seattle. He advances $2.5 million. Hey, hey, my, my, rock and roll will never die. Hang your hair down in your eyes, you'll make $1 million. Well, they made us do a video, but that wasn't tough, because we just filmed ourselves smashing stuff. It's kind of weird, because there was no music, but MTV said they'd love to use it. The kids went wild, the kids went nuts. Rolling Stone gave us a 5-star review, said we played with guts. We were scoring chicks, taking drugs, and we got asked to play MTV Unplugged. You should have seen it. We went right out there and refused to do acoustical versions of the electrical songs that we had refused to record in the first place. We smashed our shit. Well, we blew them away at the Grammy show by refusing to play and refusing to go. And then just when we thought fame would last forever, along come this band that wasn't even together. Now that's alternative. Hell, that's alternative to alternative. I feel stupid and contagious. Our band got dropped, and that ain't funny, because we're all hooked on drugs, but we're out of money. So the other day, I called up the band. I said, boys, I've taken all I can. Shave off your goatees, pack the van. We're going back to Athens.
Nice blast from the past.
Yeah.
We're going back to Athens.
Yeah, that's just, I forgot about that part until I just heard it.
Athens was Seattle before, right. Seattle was Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah, that was such a REM and all that. That was a really cool thing in our day.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess that's a classic example of, you talked about in our flyer interview about your Ramblin' Jack Elliott approach to things, and that's just one side of how you present your songs, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
But would you say that's kind of at the core of what you do, in a way?
Yeah, for sure. Because I usually almost always tour alone, so whatever's on this record, it's just having fun, getting my friends together, and then so it's usually the live version will become some solo thing.
Yeah. Yeah, is that a challenge? I guess you have to kind of pick and choose.
Yes, sometimes. Some don't work. This new record is hard because I didn't I didn't write the songs for the guitar. I just sang into a speaker and started playing music around it on instruments I don't really know how to play. Have you ever done that? Where if you sit there long enough, a few notes will work, you know?
Oh, yeah.
This whole last record, it's hard for me to figure out.
Yeah, well, you know, to this day, that's kind of why I play guitar, because I'm a pianist originally.
Oh, right,
but the mystery of the guitar sort of is inviting.
Yeah. In when did you start playing piano?
Oh, God, when I was 8 or, you know, back in the 70s.
And you have a band? Do you play live sometimes?
Yeah. Yeah, my band's the Rolling Head Orchestra.
Oh, I love
and,
it.
And that's kind of a... ironic title, because it's really only 6 people, but we sometimes I supplement that with other players,
right,
but I kind of have a kind of folk song approach, but with jazz chords.
So
anyway, guitar is still kind of awkward for me, and I see that as a plus.
I do that with the piano, actually.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
On the last album, I did piano and banjo and bass. Schools had showed me that he said, you're a very bass player, a guitar player. And I'm like, oh, I'd do that anyway. So I just picked it up and started doing it on that. But then, I forgot what we're talking about.
playing unfamiliar instruments.
Oh, yeah. On this record, I would just have the drums and my voice, and then I'd pick stuff up and just start playing it. Banjo is hard and... Hard one to refigure out.
Yeah. Well, the piano playing is lovely. I thought maybe I'd play your track In Memory of John Prine.
Oh, sure. That sounds great.
There's some great piano on that. Did you have to really work at that? Or
no, that kind of fell out.
Uh-huh.
As I was making it up, I was learning it. So by the time I got done with it, I'd played it 400 times.
Right. Okay. Well, let's hear... from the latest album of Todd's, the title right, The First Agnostic Church of Hope and Wonder. put my journalism cap back on here. This is In Memory of John Prine. It's called Handsome John.
John.
Thank you. east off to Lake Marie. I realized I was crying out in tears of victory, for with a few still missing and a new one coming on, there was still nobody better than a handsome John. Here come the singing mailman.